IB Nation, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown Podcast, but the first edition of 2025 and the first of many, Sean, of the RTCF show. Recruiting team college football is the topic du jour that we will be discussing today. That is Sean Davis. I'm Brian Driscoll, and this is going to be our new Monday show moving forward. Sean and I always talk about how we want to do this show. We love doing the show. We did it on some Saturdays. It's just, it was too hard to do it consistently on Saturdays. And so we said, you know what, let's make this our Monday show. And Sean was able to figure out how to make that work. And I am excited to have this now as our Monday show, Sean. And so the way it'll work is each week we'll pick a recruiting topic related to Notre Dame. We'll discuss that. We'll pick some type of team topic that we want to talk about with Notre Dame. It'll vary. It's a lot of times it'll be just sort of the latest news, the latest happenings, you know, kind of looking forward, some kind of big picture topic that we want to discuss, which today is going to be interesting. Is we're going to talk about, is Notre Dame an elite program? And is the nation still viewing Notre Dame in the same light it viewed the 2020, 2018, and 2012 teams? And if they are, is that appropriate? Is that fair? Or not fair, is that an accurate way of portraying Notre Dame? And we have some thoughts on that. And then we'll pick a college football topic. And sometimes that'll be sort of what related to Notre Dame, but it's meant to take a big picture look at college football as a whole. And so today in the recruiting topic, Sean, we're going to talk about James Blanchard and whether or not Notre Dame is zeroing in on a new GM for their football program. We're going to talk about that. We're going to dive into some things we've heard that are where things stand. And then we'll talk about, you know, why is this the guy that Marcus Freeman's targeting? And can a guy from Texas Tech really come to Notre Dame and thrive? I've had a lot of people push back on that, Sean. You and I have some strong feelings on that, and we're going to talk about those as well. And then we'll dive into the elite, is Notre Dame elite top topic, and then, you know, just kind of break down the team of where we think they stand big picture. And then we'll kind of tie that into part three, which is who are the tier one teams and why are they the tier one teams? And then who are the tier two teams that are in position to be knocking on the door of that? And so that created the reason we got started so late is because I was dumb enough to bring that conversation up. And so, of course, me and Sean start talking like the show's already started and are like, you know what? We probably should save this for the show. And that's a lot of times. That's really where RTCF started, is Sean and I'd be on the phone for a couple hours. Like, dude, we need to start just like making this a show. You know what I mean? Like, just take these topics that we discuss and make it a show. And that's what today is about. So, Sean, so excited to have you with me today, man. Looking forward to the first of many RTCF shows for this offseason.
Man, excited to be back talking college football, Notre Dame recruiting. Can't wait to see what comes of this. Looking forward to the chat and everybody, IB Nation, and what everyone has to say. It's going to be a fun ride this offseason.
Now, depending on how long the three topics we want to discuss today go, we'll determine if we do a mailbag or not. But you guys can go ahead and throw your mailbag questions in there, because then we can decide if we are going to do one. Is it going to be the normal hour? Will it be shorter? Whatever the case may be. And Sean, I believe you have something else that you have planned for this evening that I'm sure you and your wife will be doing. Did you want to share that with everybody?
Or? Oh, wow, man. Thank you for being gracious with the time. Our daughter, Ariel Camille. Of course, you all know she just graduated from the University of Southern California. Don't throw rocks at me.
I've gotten over that, the heartache of that. I still blame her grandpa on that one. It's okay.
But no, she was actually allowed to live audition for The Voice season 27, which begins tonight. Her episode won't air tonight. So I'll let you guys know on the message board on my social media which episode her live audition airs. But she is a participant in season 27 of The Voice on NBC beginning tonight at 7 p.m. So lock in support, Ari Camille. Her name is Ari, Where You Been? That's something she's creating. She's actually working on a foundation to help underprivileged kids take trips and experience different worlds and experiences outside of their communities. And so we look forward to helping her build that brand. And once again, Ari Camille, season 27 of The Voice, beginning tonight on NBC at 7 p.m. Central Time, 8 p.m. Eastern. And I'll let you guys know when her live edition is actually going to be aired. We're super excited, and the best is still yet to come for her life and all of our lives. I truly believe that. So thank you for your support. Her music is up on all streaming platforms. Just search Ari Camille.
Well, I know you sent me the trailer, the trailer for the season, and she was on there. I was like, it was like you could, you had to like, okay, I'm looking for it. I'm like, oh, there she is. So that was pretty cool. Looking forward to that very much. So I know, Sean, you'll have further updates with that. So definitely key in, but I know that was a proud papa moment for you. I remember when you and your wife flew out there for that. Yeah. So that'll be awesome too. So man, I'm looking forward to it, but yeah, so stay locked into Sean, SD2 Mics at Twitter. I'm sure you can see him there. That's your, did I get that correct? At
SD2
Mics. And then obviously he'll be talking about that more in the Lucky Lefty show. And then next Monday, I'm sure we'll probably have a recap. I may have to have you, give a film breakdown of her performance whenever that happens. No, I'm kidding. Well, Sean, let's dive in today's topic, man. And, and talk about kind of, is Notre Dame zeroing in on a GM hire? Why is that the hire? What's the latest on that hire? And then we'll talk more specifically about it, but it's obviously not, shocking news for people to learn that Marcus Freeman has been really focusing on James Buchanan, who is currently the general manager. I believe is his title general manager at Texas. I guess it is general manager. I know he had a different title at one point in time, but it is general manager now. And so basically James Blanchard is the general manager at Texas Tech, and he is the top candidate. I mean, we can say that he's the number one candidate that Marcus Freeman has in mind for this job. There are other candidates that we know and we've heard from different sources that Marcus Freeman likes a lot, but he's starting off with the number one candidate, and I do believe that's James Blanchard. And so basically they met a couple different times this weekend, according to different sources. Yesterday was really the meeting they had a meeting very recently that there's been some different, discussion from people on when that was, but it doesn't really matter when it was. It was this weekend. And it was a conversation to basically say, hey, listen, you're our guy. We want you. You like what we're doing here. Let's try to figure it out. And so where they are now, Sean, is basically Marcus Freeman has identified James Blanchard as top guy. There's no hardball being played like, well, if you don't take this, then we're going to go. They want to make this work. I think both sides would like to make this work. But first, before we kind of talk in about James Blanchard, let's just talk a little bit about what the potential holdups may be, although we do believe that they're working through those things. And I actually think they're very fair things. It's not money. James Blanchard, from what we were told, is he got an offer. It's not a situation where it's like, well, you got to give me more. It's more of he's looking at the job and the fit and what he believes in versus what Notre Dame believes in, and just making sure that they can all be working together. And I think that's something that you should always spend a lot of time on when looking to make a move like he's making. He's a father of five. So I think him and Marcus Freeman can probably, have some conversations and relate to that, of what it's like to make that kind of move. Marcus Freeman has turned down jobs in the past when he's a defensive coordinator that were not necessarily best for his family. And so I think if anybody understands that, hey, I need to make sure that this is the absolute right thing because I'm uprooting my entire family and I don't want to do that for a gig that I'm not 100% certain I'm going to be able to thrive at and be happy about that. And we think those are some of the conversations. And really what it boils down to, Sean, is this. At Texas Tech, James Blanchard has absolute complete control of personnel. He makes the decisions on recruiting and high school level. He makes the decision. He and his staff make the decisions on high school recruiting. They do the evaluations. They do, hey, here's who we're going to go get. The coaches will then obviously assist in the recruiting to a degree, but it's him and his staff that are primarily responsible for putting the roster together in high school and the transfer portal. At Notre Dame, obviously, the GM before, Chad Bowden, had a big role in that, but Marcus Freeman and the assistant coaches had a much more significant role than what we saw at Texas Tech. So what they're going to have to find a way is like, okay, look, I believe there's a desire with all the changes of the last year for the GM to have more control than was previously allotted in regard to overall roster composition, but at the same time, this is still Marcus Freeman's program. He's going to have ultimate say on certain things. And then also, you need to make sure that your assistant coaches are here, because at Texas Tech, you didn't have a Dylan McCullough at Texas Tech. You didn't have a Mike Mickens at Texas Tech. Two guys that you and I, Sean, would argue with people, if not the best, one of the best evaluators of their positions in all of college football. And so it's a good GM, in my opinion, will say, hey, look, here's my opinion, but let me go make sure Coach McCullough's on the same page with me. Or let me make sure that Coach Mickens is on the same page with me, or Coach Denbrock's on the same page with me. I think that's what a good GM will do. And I think it's about working out those particulars is what we believe from talking to different sources is really what Coach Freeman and Coach Blanchard are working out. Is can it work in that regard? You have your way of doing things. I have my way of doing things. Yours has worked for Texas Tech. I think you've gotten close to maximizing what Texas Tech can be as a program. Obviously, what we're doing works. We got to make them, you know, you're not going to come here and do what you did there, and we're not going to ask you to come here and do what the guy before did. Otherwise, why we just promote one of his dudes, right? It's we love what you're doing. You respect what we're doing. Let's see if we can make it work. And that's really what it comes down to, Sean. And any decision that'll be made will be about that, not about is Notre Dame paying enough, because the number that you and I have heard thrown around, Sean, and I don't know that it's you know, we know of a range. If Buchanan is the hire, or Blanchard is the hire, or is it it's Blanchard, right? Or yes, James Blanchard. If James Blanchard is the hire. And James Buchanan was a president of the United States, so I don't know why I keep saying that. If James Blanchard is the hire, it will show, and it's announced that what his salary was, it'll show that the decision for the change this offseason was not because Notre Dame was unwilling to pay for that role. This isn't a money deal for James Blanchard either. This is a, is this the right fit? Are we going to be able to do magic together? And making sure there is on the same page. And that's basically where it's at right now.
I want to point out something very interesting, what you were talking about with trying to figure out the fit. I think one important factor is the timing, right? You have someone like a James Blanchard that's coming in. And if this was 2 years ago, Notre Dame might be more willing and more amenable to some of the demands or the requests from a James Blanchard. Coming off a national championship with a system that has been proven in the eyes of the people that work in the staffing and administration, the coaching staff. Look, we were right on the precipice of hoisting the trophy, doing it this way. Some things possibly could be upgraded or changed. However, you know, some things that you might want to do right now, we might not be open to it because we've had success doing it this way for 2 to 3 years. And for James Blanchard, if he was the same candidate 2 years ago with Notre Dame trying to make that jump, now you're talking about a situation where Marcus Freeman might be more open to some of the things that he's bringing to the table or some of the things that he might suggest that need to be changed or possibly improved. You know, at the way things are done, because this landscape is ever changing.
Yep.
Like anytime ever before, year to year, roster management and roster building becomes even more difficult or even more nuanced, right? And you have to have a guy that can adjust on the fly to those things. And that's one of the things we hear about him. And that's one of the things that there, we'll get to this later on in the conversation, but there is very much similarities between the challenges at Texas Tech and the challenges at Notre Dame. It's not apples to apples, but there are some similarities there that can be transitioned or transferred based upon the success that Blanchard has had, in my opinion. So I think the timing is something to think about with the fit. Of course, the family dynamic, you point that out. And then I just think, lastly, which I mentioned, the roster building, right? Roster building can be done many different ways. I spoke to someone this weekend and they told me and gave me their opinion of the top four GMs in the nation. And none of them do it the same. Mm-mm. They're right. all different. They're all highly gifted, but they're gifted at something totally different.
And Chad Bowden is part of that group of top GMs, and the way he did it is going to be a lot different than the way that James Blanchard did it. And then a couple of the other names that if Blanchard turns us down that we expect Marcus Freeman to turn to, mm-hmm. they'll do it very differently than either one of those two. And that's the same way in the NFL, Sean. I mean, and that's really where this position is kind of trending towards to a degree is that is you have to have, it's not just a recruiting director that's been given the cool name of GM to get him a pay raise. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think the thing that you pointed to, Sean, about the whole, the changing landscape, it is super hard for coaches as the primary recruiting drivers of an operation to be able to coach and recruit and also stay on top of that type of just the evolution of this position. Because you talk about how Chad Bowden's been GM for basically a year and how different that job is viewed now compared to when he took that job a year ago. It is really insane how that has evolved, and it's difficult for coaches to constantly be staying ahead of that. And that's something that Notre Dame is going to have to figure out, and that's where this conversation comes, Sean, because I think there's some merit to coaches being able to take a little bit of a step back from a recruiting standpoint, to where obviously the evaluation piece is going to be very important. The building relationships piece is going to be important, but to where if some of that burden can be taken on by not just James Blanchard, but his whole staff, that then allows the coaches to focus more on the current roster, to focus on their own families, and to focus on, I don't know, here's a crazy idea, coaching. You know what I mean? And so if you have a recruiting staff and a talent acquisition staff and that handles a lot of the NILs. And the other thing too is if you can remove coaches from the NIL conversation, that creates a lot, it helps eliminate some of the potential drama. But hey man, look, I got nothing to do with that. I'll go talk to them. But you know what I mean? Like that's not my department. I think all of those things can play a big role in allowing coaches to coach more. And I think if you can take some of that recruiting burden off of coaches, that then makes staying in college more attractive than going to the NFL, which you're seeing a lot of assistant coaches, a lot of coordinators, even some head coaches going to the NFL. And the NFL is paying coordinators a lot of money. I mean, Chip Kelly just got $6 million. A lot of assistant coaches are taking that leap because they're like, hey, listen, I can go to the NFL, coach for 6-7 months, and then the rest of the time off. I mean, I'm not going out to Mobile. I'm not doing I got to, kind of look at film of my guys, but that's it, and give you some feedback. But it's a different animal. And I think that can make some of these coaches say, hey, look, I don't have to deal with all that craziness, because now, unlike where it was 5 years ago, where the position coaches had to kind of do all the recruiting for their position, now a lot of that burden's being taken off of them to a degree. And that can make that, I think that makes these things a little bit more attractive and can maybe keep people in certain positions a little bit longer than maybe in the past. So that's going to have to be interesting. But you talk about it, Sean, it can be difficult when you're doing something a certain way and it works and somebody has a completely different way of doing it. And you're trying to come together and say, hey, look, we need to make this work. That can be a challenge. But I do think if they can find that common ground of your staff is going to obviously have a big say on what's going on, but we need to have some relationships and some, and the thing you and I talked about is if I'm James Blanchard, this is my thing. Look, coach, you're hiring us to do a job. Trust us to do the job. But if you have a kid that you like and you want to pound the table for that kid, we're going to trust you. You know, like, but you better be willing to pound on the table for that kid. And you had 9 kids you pounded on the table for. Maybe you and I have a different of opinion on what pounding the table actually means. You know, so like if Mike Mickens a couple years ago is going to say, hey, listen, I know you got these corners on the board. This cat in Texas named Leonard Moore, that we've got to get that kid. You know, that's a dude we got to get. You know, Benjamin Morrison. If he's willing to pound on the table, then we're going to put all our resources. We're going to trust Mike Mickens because he's earned that reputation and say, hey, we're going to go get him. there has to be sort of that coming, that common ground of, you know, you guys want to have some of this taken off of your shoulders, then you need to trust us to do this. And if you are going to say, hey, look, we need to go in this direction that maybe isn't on the same page as what we think, you better be willing to pound on the table for that one. And I think that is, to me, would be the way to make it work is, look, we're going to trust them to run the job, but everything still runs through Marcus Freeman and everything is being done with constant communication with the position coaches. You know, I send my assistant, hey, go down and talk to Coach McCullough and let him know where things stand. Hey, go down and talk to Coach Brown, you know, sit down with him, go over to board, see if he has any thoughts on it, you know, let him, you know what I mean, and make sure we're on the same page and then we can all work forward together. Because what can happen, Sean, is if Mike Brown thinks, and this is a complete hypothetical, if Mike Brown's like, hey, these are my top five priorities, and James Blanchard and his staff or whoever the GM staff thinks these are our top five priorities and only like two of them are the same guy, then all of a sudden there's different messages being given out to different players. And this is going to get back to all these kids because they all talk nowadays. You got to make sure that everybody's on the same page moving forward. And that can be the challenge of what a GM is doing in college, which isn't the same in the NFL. In the NFL, it's like, dude, you coach the guys that you're given by the general manager, essentially. And that's where you've got to have a little bit more common ground and communication. And that's going to be a big, big key. But I think there's most coaches are going to like the fact that some of that day-to-day recruiting burden is being taken off their shoulders and they get back to coaching football.
And in all fairness, you know, even before that GM title was given to Chad Bolden last offseason, from what I'm hearing, Notre Dame was moving in that direction anyway.
With him?
Of just adding the GM position. Like, sure. They recognized where college football was heading. You know, whether or not they would elevate him, you know, or just place somebody else in his position, the powers that be were already talking about that, the need for that position. I do think the position itself, though it's not there, is slowly progressing to kind of be like an NFL-type general manager, especially with NIL. There are some things that you have to do to be able to operate similarly to an NFL general manager. Now, this is something else we have to think about with James Blanchard, is that when coming in, he is coming into a situation very much knowing what Notre Dame is. He knows exactly who Notre Dame is, has profound respect for Notre Dame. We know that Marcus Freeman, if you go back and you look at his hiring practices, most of the time he's very comfortable going to and trying to get guys that he's had a previous relationship with or connection with through someone else, has coached with. This is an instance with James Blanchard where they have profound professional respect for one another, but really don't know one another personally. They've not worked together. They have not been in the same office or university together. So now this time, this weekend, and the days to come will be about sitting down, asking questions, getting to know each other, seeing what the fit is. And that could possibly lend itself to, you know, a 3-4 day process for there to be some level of comfort for both guys to kind of finally pull the trigger. That's just something to point out. So it's really nothing for fans to like, man, when is it going to happen? This is a situation that's probably a little bit different from other situations where he knew Mike Denbrock. He had a relationship with Mike Brown. All of these guys that he's hired, they didn't have to go through the minutia of getting to know each other along with striking a deal. You know, in this instance, in a very important, this might be one of the most important hires moving forward.
Yeah.
Right? And because of that, I would like to point out this, and I always point to this. We talked about this weekend. It reminds me very much. Notre Dame was just in a national championship game. And as much as you can talk about how much faith they have in their system and what they've done and how successful it's been for them, it reminds me of the Chicago Bulls, that when they drafted Michael Jordan, they brought in a coach and a GM that was able to get them to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they failed multiple times against the Pistons. They made the hard decision to say, Doug Collins, thank you for developing Michael Jordan. Thank you for developing Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen as youngsters and getting them to this point that they're all stars now. However, we don't think you're the coach to get us over the hump and win the world championship. That is a very hard place to be for Notre Dame. It's very difficult. And Marcus Freeman has to decide, is what we do good enough? Or do we need to change certain things or find someone that can bring in certain ideas that we had not been operating in that can get us over the top? This is part of that on the Marcus. James Blanchard is thinking about things, but Marcus Freeman has things to think about as well. And so it just, for me, it's a very fascinating thing to watch play out. And as we hear more information, I'm sure we'll talk about that. But those are the dynamics at play here. You know, as we talked about, the simple things like family, salary, timing, all of that. But there are things to think about on both sides, from comfortability. And Marcus Freeman, he says, challenge everything, right? So this is an instance to see whether or not he does that, concerning looking within himself and looking within his program to say, is what we're doing enough to eventually get where we want to go?
I mean, isn't that kind of the fact that James Blanchard is, and a couple of the other guys that we've heard mentioned as candidates that he likes a lot too, the list of candidates told me that Marcus Freeman does understand that they're close, but they're not there yet. And that he's not satisfied with, well, we had a great season, and this is just kind of peak Notre Dame. That he got that taste, and it's like, yeah, we can be here, and we've got to get better. I also think you don't look at guys like this if you're not willing to give up a little bit of the control. And if they do it right, this is something that Marcus Freeman, because let's be real, if James Blanchard comes to Notre Dame and he has a big say on talent acquisition, it's not the first time that's happened in Notre Dame history, where a recruiting guy, a GM, so to speak, has been the primary driver of talent acquisition. And I'm not talking about Chad Bowden. I'm talking about Vinny Serrato. I mean, one of the things that helped them is Luke could focus on running the team and all the different things that went to that and all the things that drag you in directions of being the head coach at Notre Dame. And then Vinny went out and got the players and they had four straight number one recruiting classes. With all the demands that Marcus Freeman has on him as a coach, if there's some things you can take off his plate to a degree, right? This always still has to be. People keep saying, this is the direction that we're going, where GMs kind of run program. Like, at some places, that's going to be the case. It's not going to be the place of places. A key, in my opinion, it won't be the way it's done at Notre Dame, Alabama, Ohio State. Because at the end of the day, the coaches are still the people in charge of the programs there. And they have to be in college because it's not the NFL where they're professionals. I mean, people can say all they want, well, they're getting paid now, they're professionals. No, they're not, because professionals are people that have gone through college. They're 23, they're 24, they're 25 years old. These are still 18, 19, 20-year-old kids. And so there has to still be a level of culture building that's important in college that's even beyond what it is in the NFL. And so there still has to be – the head coach still has to be the driver of the program. But if some of the talent acquisition aspects can be taken over, and I can still do this over here, and I can still go speak to this group and that group and this group, and I can still have a big say on I'm still closing, I'm still recruiting, I'm still involved. You'd be a fool to not take advantage of Marcus Freeman's recruiting ability. You'd be a fool to not take advantage of Dylan McCullough and Mike Mickens and Mike Denbrock's recruiting ability. An absolute fool. But you'd also be a fool as a position coach if you don't say that there's value to where some of that being taken off my plate is a great opportunity for us as a football program, because then I can spend a little bit of extra time on that I would be doing over here, really breaking down my position group, going over to spend some time, with an NFL team that's got a great, successful pass offense. I can go spend a week over here with the Los Angeles Rams trying to talk to their receivers coach about some of the things that they're teaching. Or if I'm Mike Denbrock and say, hey, I want to go spend some time with this offensive staff or whatever, that I can do that without feeling like, oh shoot, I can't now because I have to literally do everything that goes into recruiting. And I think those things, if you do it right, can make you a better football team. But you also still need to understand that when you've got people like Dylan McCullough, you've got people like Mike Mickens, You've got people like Mike Denbrock that have proven to be also great evaluators. You'd be a fool not to take advantage, not to also utilize that and show some faith there. Some coaches won't get that benefit of the doubt. I'm sorry, you're 25 years old. You're a brand new – like if Chris O'Leary was still here. I love you, Chris, but you know what? We're going to go ahead and handle this. And then you, but that would have been great for a guy like Chris O'Leary, who was young and still not, you know, still not a great recruiter yet. Or, I mean, there's a lot of things like, look, he could coach though. You're going to see more guys like that, I think, get opportunities to be coaches because they don't have to do as much of the recruiting piece. And I think that if you do it right, I think there's a lot of merit to this. And I think that's really the advantage of having someone like a James Blanchard running your program, is it can take some of that burden off of the coaches who are just, and I've said this before, Sean, the calendar for recruiting is just ridiculously stupid in college football. And until that calendar changes, it's going to be, but now you have people that can kind of, that's your job. Your job year round is to recruit, that's portal, that's high school. That means getting ahead on, I mean, as the season's going on, they're not only recruiting high school players, but you've got part of your staff is also recruiting the nation. Hey, we're going to need a D tackle at the end of the year. Let's put a list together of some guys we think could really help us. And if some of them jump into the portal, then we go after them. And those are different aspects of it, Sean, that you look at and say, I think there can be a lot of advantages to this type of thing.
I agree with you.
Let's talk about this last piece. And we've both heard it. Some of it's been brought up in a very understandable, fair way, and some of it's just brought up really just poorly. But when you look at it like this, can a guy that coached at Texas Tech or recruited at Texas Tech, he can't come to Notre Dame and thrive because Texas Tech is a different animal, you know, and you're not recruiting the same kids. It's a different type of, and you know, it's different type of school. It's all these different things that go into it. And if brought up correctly, it's a fair question, Sean. But let's speak on this here real quick, because I'll give my opinion as a coach. You share your opinion as, you know, from the standpoint of you have of talking to people and talking to young people as not a coach, being a media member much longer than I have been. I'll tell you how I see it as a coach. Recruiting's recruiting. And what makes you a good recruiter, if you're a good recruiter because of your ability and not because I can pay people more, like, let's be honest, there's some coaches in the SEC back in the day that were known as being good recruiters because they were really good at getting the bag people to give kids money. That doesn't make you a great recruiter. Well, great recruiter, the guys can go out there and build the relationships, build the trust, employ the vision. And you know, we were here listening to Jerome Bettis tell the story to Ryan Clark and the guys the other day about how, you know, Lou Holtz walks in and, you know, cracks a joke about his caddy in the neighborhood. And then he says he walked right in and he bypasses Jerome and his dad and goes right to his mom. And he's loving on her. And they're like, hey, what about us? But he knew, Mr. Jerome, he knew who the decision maker was in his family. And when Lou Holtz left, his mom looks at Jerome and says, you're going Notre Dame. Like, that's a gift. You know, I remember watching the U and about how Schnellenberger left his pipe at Melvin Bratton's house. And he talked about, I left a lot of pipes at people's houses because it was an excuse to have to go back. There was all part of that strategy. There's a lot of things going to be in a great recruiter that have nothing to do with where you are. You just have those chops. And those things translate no matter where you are. When you go to a different school, you have to learn more about that school. What type? I mean, look, will James Blanchard have to go to Notre Dame and understand, listen, these are the parameters we're working with from an academic standpoint. You know, these are the type of character may matter more in certain areas than it does other places. You and I were talking about this last night. There are some coaches like, I don't care if he can run a 4.4. I don't care what kind of kid he is. Marcus Freeman doesn't view it that way. Can't view it that way. Notre Dame doesn't view it that way. And there's just different, but that can be learned. Then you apply the things that make you a good recruiter to that criteria of student athlete. There are kids that he would love to recruit at Texas Tech, but he's not going to waste his time on because he knows I'm not beating Texas, Notre Dame, Alabama, and Ohio State for that kid. But now he's got, you know, I said this last week. You walk into a place and you got FIU on your polo. They may all love you, but they're not going to give you that much time because you're FIU. But then that next week you walk in and all of a sudden you got a new job and you got a U on your polo, or you got a gator head on your polo, or you got an Alabama cursive A on your polo. Now all of a sudden those same kids that wouldn't give you the time of day before are going to love all over you because you have a much bigger brand behind you. You know what I mean? It's like, I think of that scene from Crocodile Dundee where the guy pulls a knife on him. You know, he's got a knife. That's not a knife. It's a knife, right? Like you come in with your little FIU polo. I'm coming in with Notre Dame on my logo. With all due respect, you may be three times the recruiter I am. I'm walking out of here with that kid and you're not. You know what I mean? Because it's his weapon is the brand. It's the ND. When you get guys that have the type of personality that Marcus Freeman had, Chad Bowden had, Mike Mickens had, and their talent, it's no different than going from Cincinnati, where Mike Mickens was, where Marcus Freeman was, where Chad Bowden was, to Notre Dame, and having great success. Why? Because the tools were already there. You just had to apply them to the type of student athlete that you could bring in at Notre Dame. Sometimes that's a positive because there's some kids who fit all of Notre Dame's criteria that he would love to have at Texas Tech. I mean, K.K. Smith was a guy that he found and went after, and then Chad Bowden was like, but we want him. And just like that K.K. leaves Texas Tech and goes Notre Dame. You know, like, you don't think he would have wanted some of the Texas kids that Notre Dame has on their roster, Jaden Greathouse and guys like that? He knows he's not getting those guys. Now he can. And so, to me, if you have the chops, you have the chops. You have to learn the specifics of Notre Dame, but that's the easy part. It's a lot easier to learn what works at Notre Dame and what we're looking for here as a student athlete than it is to learn how to recruit. And if you got the chops, you got the chops. I've said this. I said this when they hired Clark Lea. I said this about Marcus Freeman. I said this about Chad Bowden. I said this about Mike Mickens. Guys, if you got the chops, you got the chops. And there's a lot of great coaches out there and that nobody's ever heard of, and they come to a place like Notre Dame or Alabama, and all of a sudden this guy starts thriving. Why? What did Chad Bowden learn at Cincinnati about the type of players they could get that helped him thrive at Notre Dame? Nothing. It's he had the certain ability, and then once he got to Notre Dame, he had the bigger brand power behind it. Same with Marcus Freeman. I mean, there's kids that jumped on board. I mean, Marcus Freeman comes to Notre Dame, and boom, Benjamin Morrison comes. Jalen Snead, Junior Tillamaca, Josh Burnham, Tyson Ford, guys they had no shot at before that he gets. But here's the thing. None of those guys were going to commit to him at Cincinnati. None of them. None of them were. Not a single kid that Marcus Freeman has landed at Notre Dame that you'd consider a top prospect is someone who would have played for him if he was still at Cincinnati. But what changed? Did he get better at recruiting? No. He's got that ND brand on his polo now. And that's what matters. The chops were always there. And that's the same thing for what James Blanchard has done at Texas Tech. The chops are clearly there. I mean, back-to-back top 25 recruiting classes at Texas Tech. You know what I mean? Like, that's significant. Now you get that brand power behind him and his recruiting staff of a Notre Dame. And then now he's got, with all due respect to Joe McGuire, but now he's got Marcus Freeman walking in these kids' doors with him. He's got Mike Mickens walking in these kids' doors with him. He's got Dylan McCullough and Mike Denbrock and Joe Rudolph and guys like that walking in that door with him. You start getting excited about it. But being at Texas Tech is not a hindrance. If anything, it's a benefit because he has understood, I got to find those diamonds in the rough. And Notre Dame still needs to find those guys. They're not going to be top two in recruiting every year, in my opinion. It's just the systems, there's still going to be kids they can't go get. Notre Dame still has to be able to find those kids like the Benjamin Morrisons, like the Leonard Moores, that aren't big-time prospects that we see as a staff great talent in, and we got to identify that guy and still go get those guys. You can get a top 100 player like a Christian Gray where you beat Ohio State and LSU for him. But what surrounded Christian? Benjamin the year before, Leonard the year after. Now, what made Benjamin unique is even though he wasn't ranked high, they had to beat out Jimmy Lake and Nick Saban to get him. The big boys knew. The big boys didn't know about Leonard Moore as much. Mike Mickens knew. And those type of guys are the ones that you still need to go find on top of going out and getting the guys that we are more ready-made, big-time players. It's about finding elite potential. Some of that elite potential is already tapped into. Go find those guys. Some of that elite potential are going to be like the Leonard Moores, the Aeneas Williamses, the guys who maybe aren't big-time prospects that they got to go find. And I think that's what makes it unique to get a guy from a place like Texas Tech, because he has shown, I can go out and get a star. Notre Dame would have loved to have had Micah Hudson in their class last year. He went to Texas Tech, right? But they also need to be able to find those diamonds in the rough as well. And that's what this staff has done a great job of, that the next staff needs to also do, while still being able to say, but let's go get some of these big fish and get them as well. And I think that's why I think a guy like James Blanchard could be a very successful at a place like Notre Dame, because he has already shown he can do one. Now you give him that brand power behind him. Whew.
We talked about fit, right, with the total autonomy and who he is. And he knows who he is. He's very confident in his ability to evaluate, to be able to recruit, and to be able to close. And this is what I was talking about earlier. It's not apples to apples, but you have to do it differently at Texas Tech. Well, you have to do it differently at Notre Dame. Like, different resources, different brand power, but the operation is still the same. We have to find a way that's different than everybody else in order to be successful. So you're talking about Notre Dame, the middle, let's just say that, because I'm not trying to be disparaging when I use these examples. Middle of the road, it's not talking about anyone's talent, but let's just say middle of the road kids are what Notre Dame successfully can get. They're not elite top guys, but the guys right under that, tier two, tier three, Notre Dame has no problem getting those kids. So in order to close that gap, how can you get some of those top one kids, which Marcus Freeman and Chad have been able to go ahead and get some of those kids? Can you get more? There are something things that you can add that can close the deal, especially at positions like defensive tackle, where you haven't had that recent success or haven't had the recent success. Can you do it at the wide receiver position where you haven't done it recently? That's something to think about. That a guy like James Blanchard believes. It's not really about where he is. He believes. He's the same guy that has pulled up, just like Marcus Freeman when he came to Notre Dame, and he pulled up to the big boy poker table. And all of those guys that have been there for years, like Nick Saban, and all of the top coaches looked around like, what are you doing here? You got to work your way up here. And Marcus Freeman's like, no, I'm here. I'm going to be here. I might not win them right now. I might not win the big kids right now, but I'm going to give my fair share. James Blanchard has been the same way in the state of Texas when it comes to fighting against Texas, fighting against Oklahoma, fighting against the SEC schools coming down there. He's pulled up to the big boy table with the confidence, I might lose early, but I'm going to win my fair share. And you've seen that success with the success of top 25 classes that they had, and he's had great success in the transfer portal for Texas Tech as well. So that comes over, because Notre Dame, even though it might not get as much attention because they're not getting the top of the top transfer guys every year, but Notre Dame has done a great job identifying the need and being able to supply the need via the transfer portal. And that's something that easily is transferable for him, because he's shown that he could do that at Texas Tech. So I think there are two sides to the coin of what he wants. Yes, it might be a negative from the side that, man, this is Notre Dame. I don't know if you can have full autonomy. I don't know if it's a good idea for us to give you full autonomy. But saying confidence says there are certain things that Notre Dame hasn't been able to do that you might be the guy that leads the charge to closing the deal,
right,
to get those top defensive tackles, to get those top wide receivers, and kind of continue to close the gap when the previous guy did a fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, we just went to a national championship.
Right. A lot of guys that were recruited. Like, this is the thing, Sean, and you and I have been frustrated by this reaction from the fan base. And I get some of the frustration people have with Chad, because he flirted with Michigan last year and then obviously took the USC job. Like, dude, you literally picked the two biggest rivals that Notre Dame has, basically, and flirted with one year and then married one the next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I understand that. And you can feel any way you want about that. I have certain feelings about that. But don't try to change the narrative or change history, right? Like, you have a right to feel whatever you want to feel. You don't have a right to facts, to your own facts and your own truth. It's no, well, I have my truth. No, mm-hmm. There is no your truth. I just watched Notre Dame go 14-2 and play in the national championship. And I know for a fact that Chad Bowden, along with the staff and Marcus Freeman, played a giant role in acquiring the talent to play there. And we're going to talk more about that in the next section, Sean. But But you can say, look, Chad did a phenomenal job and deserves a lot of when, however you feel about how he left. You can feel however you want about that. I'm not going to defend that. There's nothing to defend. He got a better a job that he felt was better. Okay, we kind of all would do that if that opportunity came up. I can say, hey, man, you know, I wouldn't have done what you did, but I'm a Notre Dame fan. Chad Bowden didn't grow up a Notre Dame fan. Of course I'm not going to go work at USC. You sent your freaking daughter to USC, Sean, right? Why? Because that's what was best for her, right? That's what she thought was best for her, and that's what she wanted to do. You can feel any way you want about that. You can have whatever negative feelings you want about that. I'm not going to push back on that at all. And I don't necessarily like that he flirted with those two teams both years. But I'm not going to sit there and try to pretend that he wasn't very instrumental in putting together the team that we just always talk about how much fun we had watching this team. I mean, you know, I point this out. I think 15 of the 22 starters were guys that were recruited by Chad Bowden and Marcus Freeman and most of the depth. Right. I mean, and even one of the guys that was recruited by the previous coaching staff, he was wallowing in on the scout team at wide receiver because you wouldn't give him a chance at wide receiver. And Marcus Freeman's the one that was like, hey, we'll take a shot at that guy over there named Xavier Watts. You know what I mean? So he even had that role, even though he didn't technically recruit him. So did a phenomenal job. But to your point earlier, Sean, that doesn't mean that you are happy with where you are because you did lose. And saying, hey, look, we had a great year. We've done a great job. Can we be better? Yeah. So let's challenge what we're doing now and find a way to get better. And that's what Notre Dame is doing with this move. And if James Blanchard decides not to take the job, and I don't believe that would be based on money, based on what you and I have told, it will not be a money thing. If Texas Tech comes up with an offer that makes him comfortable taking it, he's taking that offer because he didn't think the fit was right at Notre Dame. If he takes the offer at Notre Dame, it won't be because Notre Dame made him a financial offer he can't refuse. That's the thing that's probably impressed me the most from what I've heard in this conversation is, yeah, the money's talking. He's a father of five. I mean, of course, the money, the pay raise, and he's not going from like Texas to California where he's going from a state with no income tax to a state with crazy taxes. He's going to a state in Indiana that has an income tax, but it's a very tax-friendly state, you know, being someone who lives here. Sean but it's so yeah, of course the money's nice, but I like the fact that he's not just like, yeah, I'll take that offer, that he cares more about, yeah, but what are we going to do here? How is it going to work? That shows me a guy that gets it. And so we like where it's trending. It's not a done deal yet as of 30 minutes before the show starting, but we do think it's trending in a good direction, barring a change of minds or hearts. I do think this is a deal that eventually get made, but it's not a done deal yet. But if they make it, if they're able to make it, Sean, I do think this is going to be one of those things where people are going to be like, uh-oh, and we're going to get into that next. So I think that's a good segue to the next section. So before we do that, folks, do me a favor, hit that like button, hit the subscribe button, hit the notification bell, share this podcast, give us a 5-star review. And a lot of the stuff we talked about in today's show, if you're a board member, you would have read 2 days ago on Saturday. We had a lot of this intel about where things stand 2 days ago. So you'll definitely want to make sure you're a premium board member at boards.irishbreakdown.com because then you get this stuff a little bit earlier or a lot earlier in most cases. And we can go into further detail, but make sure you check that out at boards.irishbreakdown.com.